In this episode of The Weekly Blend, turning human bodies into soil, the basics of hydrogen energy, and the world's most notorious succulent thief. You're listening to The Weekly Blend from Greener Us. Hello and welcome to The Weekly Blend. I'm Chris Syracuse, and we are coming to you from the island of Bali in the Indonesian archipelago. In case you didn't know where Bali was, I think some people have this idea that Bali is its own country. It's not. It feels like it sometimes. But it is, in fact, part of Indonesia. So that's where I'm at. That's where we're broadcasting from. And as you heard in the intro there, a hopefully interesting blend of news headlines, eco-news headlines for you this week. Some of them aren't from this week, but hey, I do my best. Excuse the plane flying over right there. I do not have a soundproof studio. I'm working on it. Okay, so let's jump into it. This first story here comes from NPR, and the headline is, Could Our Bodies Help New Life? Oh, sorry, let me take that back. Could our bodies help new life grow after we die? Okay, so this is a woman by the name of Katrina Spade. I'm going to let her talk about her idea. So this is Katrina Spade talking in the TED on the TED stage. So here you go.
Katrina Spade explains her idea on the TED stage.
Back in architecture school, I was thinking about all this. And I set out on a plan to redesign death care. Could I create a system that was beneficial to the earth, that used nature as a guide rather than something to be feared? Something that was gentle to the planet. That planet, after all, supports our living bodies our whole lives. And while I was mulling this all over the drawing board, the phone rang. It was my friend Kate. She was like, hey, have you heard about the farmers who are composting whole cows? And I was like, Turns out that farmers and agricultural institutions have been practicing something called livestock mortality composting for decades. Mortality composting is where you take an animal high in nitrogen and cover it with co-composting materials that are high in carbon. It's an aerobic process, so it requires oxygen, and it requires plenty of moisture as well. In the most basic setup, a cow is covered with a few feet of wood chips, which are high in carbon, and left outside for breezes to provide oxygen and rain to provide moisture. In about 9 months, all that remains is a nutrient-rich compost. The flesh has been decomposed entirely, as have the bones. I know. So I would definitely call myself a decomposition nerd, but I am far, far from a scientist. And one way you can tell this is true is that I often call the process of composting magic. So basically, all we humans need to do is create the right environment for nature to do its job. It's like the opposite of antibacterial soap. Instead of fighting them, we welcome microbes and bacteria in with open arms. These tiny, amazing creatures break down molecules into smaller molecules and atoms, which are then incorporated into new molecules. In other words, that cow is transformed. It's no longer a cow. It's been cycled back into nature. See? Magic. You can probably imagine the light bulb that went off in my head after I received that phone call. I began designing a system based on the principles of livestock mortality composting that would take human beings and transform them into soil.
Turning humans into soil. This notion came to you back in grad school, and you were like, I'm going to do this. I am going to figure out how to compost bodies. And over several years, you did research, you recruited advisors, and then you tested your idea.
Yeah, so there was no question in my mind that we could compost humans. We had done, we partnered with Washington State University and the soil science department there to do a pilot project where we composted six humans who had donated their bodies to that that work. And that was to prove it was safe and effective. We couldn't just say, oh, well, you know, we do this with cows. We had to prove it worked with humans.
Okay. So that's Katrina Spade talking about her idea for composting humans. So a few things. I mean, first of all, okay, cool. Yeah, I'm down for it. It sounds like it's relatively eco-friendly and, you know, perhaps there's a certain spiritual aspect to it. But I think it's important to point out a few things here. First of all, she's talking about this as if this is some novel idea that she just stumbled across and that it's her idea. This naturally happens. Like, why do you think that we bury human beings after they die? That's the process that happens. If we didn't put them in a casket, then they would compost naturally. So this idea that there needs to be a system, like a technologically advanced system, in this case, she's got these stainless steel tubes that she puts these human bodies in with a system of fans, and then she puts organic material around the body. This whole idea that we need to do something like that, that we need to design some kind of mechanism to do this, some kind of device to do this, is kind of absurd. Because if you listen to, I think it was the first episode we did of Weekly Blend, we were talking about Desmond Tutu. And Desmond Tutu was an archbishop in South Africa during apartheid, you know, very, very well-known kind of humanitarian. He passed away at the end of 2021. And the article that I discussed in that episode was talking about his aquamation, which is kind of similar to what Katrina Spade is discussing here, except with water. And I said something to the effect of, you know, the most eco-friendly thing to do, the most environmentally friendly thing to do would just be to dig a hole in the ground and put somebody in there. I don't think I said it as respectfully as that. I think I said dig a hole and then throw them in there. And I noticed in my analytics that a lot of people stopped listening after I said that. But regardless, the point still remains that we don't have to go to this extent. We don't have to do things like this in order to replicate natural processes. Nature already does it. So I'm going to stand by my initial point. Just dig a hole. Put the body in there. If I die, that's what I want. I want to be in whatever beautiful place that I like, dig a hole, throw me in there, you know, maybe put a rock or something there so we know where it's at. You know where it's at. Not me. I'll be dead. But yeah, I don't know. I take issue with this. Another thing to point out is this. This is a kind of a subtle thing. Maybe you didn't notice it, but I think it's also important to point out because it relates to the first point. This extreme reverence she seems to have for science and scientists. And of course, this is her talking on the TED stage. This is the TED Radio Hour from NPR. These people, with all due respect, you know, I used to work for a group of NPR stations. With all due respect to my former colleagues, there is this culture of science worship in these kind of circles. And in her TED talk there, the reverence, she says, I'm far, far, far from a scientist, right? Because how dare you even hint that you were engaging in some kind of science if you're not an ordained scientist in this church of reason and church of science. And the reason that's important to point out is that it relates to what I'm talking about with this idea that it is the scientists, it is the engineers, it is these people with quote-unquote expertise that are able to guide us into this new world and define for us what environmental sustainability looks like, what an earth-conscious living looks like. I don't believe that. I mean, I do believe that some of those people have some insight and that science, of course, the scientific method is important to figuring out and understanding the physical world. But this whole idea that we can't just keep things simple. You know, we've got to over-engineer, over-design, overthink, and then pretend that these systems that we create that just mimic natural processes are some kind of new idea. It's a little ridiculous. So if you're interested in hearing more, though, learning more about that, if you want to decompose your loved one's body after they pass away. Yeah, I suppose check out Recompose. Apparently, I don't know if we heard that in this clip that I just played, but apparently the average human body, if it goes through this process, can produce about a pickup truck bed, that much soil from the human body. So yeah, I mean, sure, that's cool. Yeah, plant a garden with your dead loved one's soil. Why not? So then the name of the company is Recompose. Maybe, I don't know. I'll follow up on this. We'll see where this goes. We'll see if this catches on. I'm sure it will, especially in Portland. I feel like Portland, Oregon, this is a thing. All right, let's move on. Next story I've got for you, hydrogen. So hydrogen as fuel. I don't know much about hydrogen. I know that it is a fuel source. I know that there seems to be some debate as to whether or not it is environmentally friendly or not. So here we go. This is a Washington Post article getting to that exact thing. It says, clean energy superstar or smokescreen for fossil fuel use. Here's what you need to know about hydrogen. So it says, hydrogen, the lightest and most abundant gas in the universe, is increasingly being used as a fuel. The gas releases relatively few planet-warming emissions as a fuel source, and proponents say it could be a key in the fight to curb climate change. Yet others warn that using hydrogen as a fuel could do the opposite. So, okay, so the whole thing is, and we can get a little bit into the specifics, but the idea is, and this is coming from the Washington Post again, the hydrogen that is currently produced is derived from fossil fuels, especially natural gas. So the idea is, in order to get this hydrogen, you've got to use energy to get it. And then it goes on to talk about the different types of hydrogen. So it says hydrogen can be burned or combusted, similar to natural gas or oil. It can also be used in these quote unquote fuel cells, where hydrogen and oxygen mix in a reaction that creates electricity. And there's a litany of both realized and proposed uses for hydrogen, from heating homes to powering airplanes. And it goes on to say, as of October, hydrogen fuel cell power generators were in use at 113 sites across the U.S. And according to the U.S. Energy Information Agency, other facilities have started to burn hydrogen to create electricity as well. Okay, so it all comes back to the same thing. We're stuck in this paradox, which is our quality of life are in developed countries, you know, in middle upper class developed countries, our quality of life demands a tremendous amount of energy, and that energy, it's just not easy to come by. It just never will be, not from renewables, not from hydrogen, not from fossil fuels. It takes energy to get energy. And that will always be the challenge. So for us, it's always the same thing. It will always come back to the same thing. Just use less, travel less, use less, need less. This all comes back to minimalism, all of it. So this whole idea, I mean, I don't know. I don't know enough about the science to comment on whether or not hydrogen is more or less detrimental to the environment compared to fossil fuels. But again, it's the same paradox. It's the same thing. You know, we're kind of fucked if we do, fucked if we don't. But for the sake of teaching you a little bit, well, having the Washington Post teach me and you a little bit more about what hydrogen's all about, let's read a little bit more here. So hydrogen is commonly referred to on a color spectrum, and when produced from natural gas, it's known as gray hydrogen. There's also blue hydrogen, which also uses natural gas, but the carbon dioxide that's released during the process is captured instead of emitted. It's also possible to use electricity to split water into hydrogen and oxygen, ideally using electricity from renewable sources. On the color spectrum, that's green hydrogen, said Frank Wolak, president of the Fuel Cell and Hydrogen Energy Association. There are a number of other stops in the color wheel as well, such as brown hydrogen, which comes from coal gasification specifically, and pink hydrogen, which is produced when the electricity comes from nuclear power. But whatever the nomenclature, the resulting hydrogen is molecularly the same. Okay, so that's from the Washington Post. Little breakdown, the different colors of hydrogen. I didn't know that. I didn't know that there were different colors of hydrogen. So, and then they go on to talk about hydrogen fuel cost effectiveness, and then talking about climate friendly and efficiency of hydrogen. And it's kind of the same stuff that you would expect from a pretentious Washington Post article from people that I think just like to hear themselves talk. I mean, that's another thing here is that it always comes back to the same thing with human beings. We need something to do. All these people, all these, you know, admittedly smart people just need something to do. They need something to talk about. So, hey, hydrogen's the next thing. So they're going to talk about it. And we're going to get on board. And depending on probably your politics and your sensibility, you're either going to think it's a good thing or it's a bad thing. Yeah. So I don't fucking know. So yeah, I don't know. We'll come back to this perhaps. Maybe we'll do more hydrogen stuff. But for the sake of this article and this particular segment, they don't seem to reach any real conclusion as to whether or not, as it's said in the headline, this is hydrogen is a clean energy superstar or just a smokescreen for fossil fuel use. I think the takeaway here is that it takes fossil fuels or some other type of energy in order to get at this hydrogen fuel. So again, the paradox. So just use less. That's really what it's all about. Okay, moving on. This one is, I'm not going to say it's funny, but it is kind of funny. So yeah, I'm going to say it's funny. So this is from The Guardian, and it says, "Crime against nature, the rise and fall of the world's most notorious succulent thief." Yeah, cool. Okay, so I don't know how to pronounce his name. Bung-Soo Kim pleaded guilty to attempting to ferry more than 3,700 wild Dudleya plants from California parks to South Korea. So if you don't know what a succulent is, it kind of looks like, it's the best way to describe it. I mean, there are all kinds of different succulents. I mean, I don't even know how many different varieties, but kind of the quintessential succulent looks almost like a cross between a mini aloe vera plant and kind of a cactus. They're beautiful. They can be all kinds of different colors. They've got this beautiful kind of soft texture. Got some really interesting patterns a lot of the time. They're very cool. And as this article points out, that they're popular. I think the quote they use in this article was popular in South Korea among hipsters and housewives, which my experience in California, that definitely seems to be the case, that a lot of hipsters, especially like 2010s, they became this kind of trend in California where if you were like a hip, environmentally conscious, you know, green, so to speak, person, you had succulents, preferably in some kind of like glass enclosure hanging from your ceiling, maybe. Yeah, so that was kind of the look. So that's what a succulent is. Apparently, there's big money to be made in the succulent thing. So this guy, Mr. Kim, who's being prosecuted for this, well, he pleaded guilty to it, and I think he's facing up to a couple of years in prison. So what he did is he came into the country, and he made multiple trips from South Korea to America. And he went up into the remote part of Northern California, Mendocino County, and he was poaching thousands and thousands of these rare succulents. And he was kind of on the radar. And then when he was flying back from, I think he was flying into LA from Mexico. They were on the radar and they got picked up at LAX, and they found, so what did they find? Game wardens of the state's Fish and Wildlife Department observed Kim renting a minivan and filling it with empty backpacks, plastic bins, and boxes. The three men later began a two-day drive up the California coast. So the three men being Mr. Kim and his two assistants. So they surveilled them. So I'm sorry, he didn't get picked up in 2018 when he was coming back from Mexico. He was being surveilled. This is like a whole like environmental sting operation here. Well, not a sting operation. They'd have to be setting them up, but this is quite the law enforcement operation. I didn't even know that this was a thing, but yeah, apparently it is. Okay. So yeah, anyway, so the game wardens are surveilling these three guys for more than a week as they navigate around California state parks up in the remote northern coast, like I said, Mendocino County. And then they come back to Southern California, these Korean guys, and they drop off their haul at this nursery in Vista, California, which I think is in San Diego area. So the idea was that they illegally pulled all these succulents out of California parks, and then they were going to have them legally exported. So claiming that they came from legal sources and have them exported out of Long Beach, Compton area. Didn't work out quite that way. They got him, and yeah, now he's in custody. So there are a couple of funny things here. This first one here, I mean, it's not funny. It's definitely not funny that this guy stole a bunch of succulents. So this is a quote from the article, from the Guardian article. The public response was overwhelmingly positive, said Captain Patrick Foy, a spokesman for California's Fish and Wildlife Department. The reaction of poaching enforcement is sometimes negative, but when it came to succulents, people were furious, Foy said. If you've been to California, especially, in Southern California too, lots of different places in California, coastal California, you'll see like in Monterey, where I spent many, many years, you'll see cliff sides and like hillsides that are just covered in these succulents, and they provide protection from erosion, and they're very beautiful. So I can see why people were pissed off about this. It's just kind of funny. You don't really hear about this. You know, you hear about people poaching elephants. You don't hear about people poaching succulent plants. Okay, so back to the article. So this is also funny. So it says, I'm just going to read on here. It probably helped that the plants, and this is a continuation talking about how the people are furious about the poaching. It probably helped that the plants being taken were popular with widespread name recognition. Didleia fernosa, the type of Didleia most sought after by California poachers, is particularly charismatic to humans, experts say. This is the funny part. They boast the precise mix of qualities that Americans demand from crime victims. They are pretty and small, very fragile, and yet curiously resilient. Their common name, Live Forevers, is said to have been given to them by the 19th century European naturalists who were shocked to find samples of the plant still alive after months-long ocean voyages. So the author is saying here, this is a Guardian article, so I'm assuming this article is British. She's saying that as Americans, we demand things from crime victims, the first being that they are pretty and small. This is what we like to see from crime victims. They're pretty and small, very fragile, and yet curiously resilient, as if Americans had some kind of preference for the victims of crime. In this case, like, she's clearly making this connection between human crime victims and these succulent victims. Like, what are you talking about? Like, what the fuck? Like, why do you got to throw that in there? But this is what you get. This is what you get from these people. And these people being these so-called journalists that just, they can't help it. They can't help but throw in their whatever their opinions are about these things. Anyway, I just find that super funny that she's talking about this list of things that Americans demand from crime victims. Yeah, okay, sure. Sure. All right, so continuing on here, it's just talking about the amount of money that this haul was worth. It's saying, so an expert witness in Mr. Kim's case said the market value of his wild succulent haul could be anywhere from $600,000, so more than $600,000 between, okay, so it's saying Well, this is quite the range, but it's basically saying anywhere from 100,000 to 600,000. Like, wow, damn, $600,000 worth of succulents. Fuck. Okay. I gotta get in the succulent business. So there you go. That's interesting story from California, the world's most notorious succulent thief. He pleaded guilty. His lawyers are looking for leniency. You know, they want a lighter sentence. But it doesn't look like he's been sentenced yet. So he's facing two additional cases in state court. We'll see. Maybe we'll follow up on this. We probably won't, though. Honestly, I don't really care what happens to him. I mean, you should have known better, bro. He tried to play the ignorant card. It's like, I didn't know it was such a big deal. Like, really? You didn't know? Come on. That's a lot of fucking plants, man. Regardless of what kind of plants, you're taking thousands of these plants from California state parks. Anyway, so Mr. Kim, Godspeed, bro. Hope you learned your lesson. So that's what I've got for you today, this episode of the Weekly Blend. And I don't know. I don't know how I feel about this. I think I've said that before. This is a tricky one for me. The reason I haven't come out with an episode in a couple weeks is because I sat down last week and I tried to go through the news headlines and I couldn't do it. I would get 5 minutes into the episode and I would just trail off or I would just say some stupid shit. So I'm just winging it now. I'm just going for it. I'm just laying back in my chair. I'm just chilling. I'm not trying to be super professional. I'm not a journalist. This is me poaching other people's news stories and then just talking shit about them. So me, like Mr. Kim, the world's most notorious succulent thief, I am also poaching the news stories from the world's largest news publications. So hopefully I can do that. I think I'm allowed to do that. It's like a fair use kind of thing. Well, I don't know. We'll see. Anybody comes after me. So there you go. Thank you for joining me on this episode of the Weekly Blend. I will see you. Well, first, I have to do the obligatory outro, as you know. Just a reminder, this show lives in the same feed as What's What and our weekly Music Plus Talk show, Vias Radio. And that show is available exclusively on Spotify. Oh, and if you don't know, What's What, we just had an episode Friday. Rushi's back. Rushi and I talk about psilocybin mushrooms, Terrence McKenna. If you know who Terrence McKenna is, well-known psychonaut, psilocybin mushroom advocate. We talk about the stoned ape theory, which is this idea that possibly this incredible explosion in intelligence and consciousness that humankind experienced was in part due to our consumption of psilocybin mushrooms. So check that out. Okay, back to the obligatory outro. By combining these three shows in one feed, that's the show you're listening to right now, The Weekly Blend, What's What, and Vias Radio, we offer an audio experience that is unique in the podcast world. So you can stay right here for stories and information about Earth Conscious Living, conversations about philosophy and literature, curated music playlists, and more. If you like what you hear, please follow us on Spotify, and don't forget to give us a 5-star review. If you're interested in visual and written content, check us out on Instagram at GreenerUsMedia. That's at GreenerUsMedia. Yeah, at GreenerUsMedia. Yes, I'll get it. One of these days, I'll get it. All right, thanks, guys. I will see you on Sunday for the episode of Vias Radio. I've got a mix for you, as usual. You know, that's what we do here. We just mix shit up. So I'll see you on Sunday.